Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, March 29th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to have a spoiler-filled conversation about Adam Wingard's new movie, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
All right, Brad, let's get into it. I guess before we get into the specifics, broad takeaways from this movie, what was your experience like? Did you like this movie, yes or no?
Yeah, I like this movie. I think it's a big, silly monster movie. You know, clearly draws from the Showa era of Godzilla movies. And I think it's one that you can have fun with. It doesn't take itself like seriously, like the Godzilla 2014 MonsterVerse Arrival, and it's more along the lines of like a Godzilla versus Kong vibe, but maybe even a little bit sillier than that too, because you know, you introduce some more concepts that are kind of absurd, you know, really in a way, and like digging deeper into the Hollow Earth just reveals how expansive the world is, and you know, adding stuff for both Kong and Godzilla that make them, you know, a little goofier, but also in a cool way. So like I had a good time with it.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed it as well. You know, it is a very goofy, very silly movie, but I think I definitely enjoyed it more than Godzilla versus Kong. We'll talk at the very end about maybe where it stacks up against all of the other MonsterVerse movies and where it might fit into like a loose ranking or something. But yeah, I generally had fun with it, and that's not always a given for me in the MonsterVerse. So I guess I was fairly pleased with it. So I thought we could break this down, Brad, into like what we thought the movie did well versus maybe what it did not do so well. And I'll kick things off with something that I thought that it did pretty well. I personally think that all of the human stories in every one of these MonsterVerse movies, maybe with the possible exception of Kong Skull Island, had been like pretty laughable, if not downright terrible. But I'm happy to say that I think the human stuff largely works pretty well here. I mean, it's like it's functional. It doesn't actively detract from my enjoyment of the movie. And I kind of feel like almost every time I watched one of these movies in the past, anytime a human character showed up on screen, I would either be yawning or rolling my eyes or looking at my watch and waiting for the giant monster stuff to happen. And this time I didn't really feel that way. But what did you think about the human stories in this movie?
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same page with you there. I think, you know, in King of Monsters, they didn't really feel like they added much. In Godzilla versus Kong, they're tangential, like the human characters typically are. But I think the characters are more fun, and they carry, you know, a lot of that over into this one. For me, I think the standout is undoubtedly Dan Stevens. He just adds a lot of fun to the proceedings, and having him as a character is a great addition. I would love it if he stuck around and became a much more prominent part of the franchise, just because he's just a cool guy with, like, you know, weird insights into giant creatures like this. And he just, the kind of way he carries himself, you know, with this silly swagger and stuff. I would love to see more of him.
Yeah, his Hawaiian shirts, his outfits were pretty on point. I don't know, like, his name is Trapper. He is introduced as like an extreme dentist, for lack of a better term. And I kind of, you know, at a certain point, I'm like, what is the deal with this character? Because he appears to have some sort of like military background or something that's never really touched on. He's able to fly the ship that they crash, you know, in Hollow Earth at one point. He just seems like to have an extreme amount of control and like self-assuredness for a guy who's supposed to be a dentist and was like an ex-lover of Rebecca Hall's character. And they never really stopped to, you know, give you like an exposition dump about like what Tracker's deal is. But Dan Stevens' swagger, like you mentioned, it just kind of carries it through. Like, you don't really, I don't know, I wasn't really super bothered by it, because he's just kind of like having so much fun, and it's just fun to watch him in this movie.
Yeah, I agree. And like, you could easily like figure out an explanation for like his history and stuff like that. That makes sense, you know, whether, you know, he's somebody who is used to working with dangerous animals, and so, you know, has experience and, you know, with various forms of vehicles, because he has to, you know, work in dangerous areas. So like, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Another thing I thought the movie did pretty well is I thought the writers managed to find a pretty good balance of comedy this time out. Like the previous movies, especially what is it, King of the Monsters, the dialogue was just abysmal all the way through. And this time I thought they did a good job of like not trying too hard with the comedy, which I think is a trap that a lot of big budget blockbuster stuff like this falls into pretty often, where it's just like very clear that they brought people in to do, you know, to punch up the jokes of the movie. And it just kind of sticks out because A, they're, in my view, they're almost never really funny. And it just kind of like muddles the tone of what they're trying to do a little bit. But this time I just thought the balance was like much better than it had been in previous MonsterVerse stuff. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on the comedy of this movie or like the general tone overall.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dan Stevens is a big part of the comedic stuff that works really well in this. You know, there's obviously some comedy stuff between the monsters as well, especially Kong. The comedy stuff that I'm less like jazzed about, even though like it's not that it's bad necessarily, but like I just wish that it was a little bit better. Is the stuff with Brian Tyree Henry's character. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a little over the top and silly, but it works better in this movie, I think, than it does in previous movies. So like I'm a little bit split on it.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, in the very beginning of this, when Rebecca Hall comes to get him and he's like very manic and kind of like, you know, talking about his conspiracy theories and all of that stuff, like I was like, oh no, are we doing this again? But I felt like he kind of like settled in over the course of the movie, and they didn't really focus on him being that kind of like crazy fish out of water, like, oh, he's got a joke for every single moment kind of thing. So I was happy that they kind of like let the foot off the gas a little bit when it came to his character. So was there anything that you thought the movie did particularly well?
I mean, for a movie like this, it's the monster action that sells it. And they did a lot of cool things to make the monster fights that much more exciting, especially in the third act, where it just kind of just goes off the wall and off the ground, literally. there's just a lot of cool stuff here that Godzilla does, and like following his path throughout the movie, kind of building up to like a big climax for him. And then you know, the stuff with Kong, watching him in Hollow Earth, you know, how he's adapted to that environment and fighting various monsters down there, and meeting the whole new like villainous ape tribe and whatnot. There's a lot of cool stuff with the kaiju in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought the score was pretty awesome as well. Did you notice that?
Yeah, it has like a cosmic 80s flair to it, which goes perfectly well with the actual music that they put on the soundtrack, which, you know, features songs from like the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. Which adds a cool style to it. You know, it's like it's almost like a neon tinge soundtrack. That's how I'll describe it.
Yeah, it's like heavy synths and very 80s inspired, and it reminds me a little bit of what Adam Wingard did with The Guest back in 2014. That had a really cool soundtrack as well. I don't know, something about the juxtaposition of like that type of sound with these larger than life action beats for these giant creatures. I don't know, just something about it just like really works for me. So yeah, I was pleased with that. Couple other things I had written down here. Most of this movie is nonverbal, and I thought that the creature emotions were communicated pretty clearly using just grunts and a series of looks and things like that. What did you think about like not the action so much as like the communication part between Kong and that little like mini Kong and some of the other creatures that appear in the film?
Yeah, I really dug that. You know, when you put the focus on the monsters like that, you know, you need to figure out a way to like make them feel like not just monsters, but characters, you know. And Kong is, I feel like, has always been the one who is superior in that way. Godzilla always feels like more of a monster, but Kong, because he's an ape, has a little bit more of that human side to him. And so making him like this kind of like a almost like a stepdad in a way, like especially when he encounters that little ape, you know, and just like the kind of relationship that builds between them. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I really like the stuff with that they did with Kong, you know, and it's such a like. I would have never anticipated that they would do something like, oh, Kong has a toothache, you know, we have to deal with that, you know. It's such like weird little details, but they work to like make you care about the character and give like you know, reasons for like the humans to interact with him, and so that like they do have like a friendly bond, you know. So it doesn't just feel like, you know, they're kind of like using Kong in a way, like they both get something from each other.
Yeah, I thought that was like a pretty smart turn of the script or whatever, like a script movement, script aspect for something like this in a movie that is like pretty dumb overall, but like dumb in a fun way. So, okay, I guess in terms of things that the movie did not do so well, I kind of thought that the scenes with Godzilla and Kong in real world locations didn't really look great. I think that Hollow Earth, as dumb as that concept is, it's actually kind of a smart location, because when most of the action in the movie is taking place there, I'm not distracted by thinking about the real world effects of these giant creatures smashing through heavily populated cities and like surely killing hundreds of thousands, if not billions of people. So I don't know. I feel like the Hollow Earth stuff, that everything, all the action filmed there, just for some reason looks better to me than them trying to make it seem like Godzilla is actually stomping through Rome, or, you know, they're fighting, they're like ripping down the pyramids or whatever kind of stuff that they're doing for scale and, you know, just to sort of like ground it more in our actual world. But I don't know. You have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think when it comes to the look, as far as like the visual effects concerned, like you can always, it always feels a little more fake when it's an environment that like, you know, what it looks like in the real world. And so like, even though Hollow Earth, you know, is made to look just as realistic, you know, it's not based on a place that we've seen before. So like, it can feel otherworldly and not necessarily feel like it's fake, but there's something about seeing real locations created with visual effects where like, you can just kind of tell. But at the same time, I also don't mind it too much, because it's not as if it looks terrible. Mm-hmm. And part of the appeal, you know, of Godzilla movies and, you know, giant monster movies in general, is constantly seeing them battle, you know, in front of these, you know, iconic skylines, and seeing them smash through these buildings, stuff like that. And so like, whereas I've taken notice of like the mayhem and the potential body count that comes from like superhero movies and stuff like that, there's something about monster movies where I think I care less, I guess. Mm-hmm. So like I'm fine with it, just because I kind of expect, you know, all these buildings to get torn down and smashed and destroyed. So I'm personally okay with it.
Okay. All right. Brad, okay with mass murder. Got it. All right.
As long as it's monsters.
I thought one of the downsides, though, was the geography of Hollow Earth. Like, there's this whole bit about there's an undiscovered subterranean realm underneath Kong's hunting ground, and he sort of like, you know, slides down the ice wall to get down there. And when he like walks into it, it is gigantic. And I just have no idea how that area relates to the rest of Hollow Earth, or how far away anything is from anything else down there. So, I mean, I know the whole thing is supposed to feel topsy-turvy and kind of like unreal to a degree, because it's a ridiculous concept. But I just wish there were some markers or like some way to geographically convey, you know, where things are and like how far away things are. I don't know if you clocked that at all, or if that didn't bother you at all, or what'd you think about that?
So at first I was thinking about like, you know, the concept of Hollow Earth and like just how much there can be. And like, and you have to, I guess you consider the fact that like, we're basically dealing with the interior of an entire planet. So there are like endless, you know, places that you can explore in this area. But I do think you're right that like, they didn't do a great job of establishing the geography of where this new hidden realm was compared to the part of Hollow Earth that we had already kind of seen with Kong, and even related to earlier in the movie, not just from Godzilla versus Kong. Mm-hmm. So I do think that they could have done a better job of like, yeah, showing exactly like how close these places are, like, you know, where like the delineation is, like as to like how it's hidden and that kind of thing. So, but like, I guess it's a little, you know, a little difficult when you're dealing with, you know, a space like that can be so expansive. So I don't know.
Yeah. Did you have anything that you thought the movie didn't really do so great before we take a break?
I don't think so, honestly. Like, it's like, I'm not like over the moon and like thinking like, oh man, this is a perfect movie. Like, cause it is just a fun, silly monster movie, but there was never anything in it where I was just like, oh, that's bad or that's super stupid. I was never like frustrated or, you know, distracted by anything that like, you know, took me out of the movie.
Yeah, there's one thing that was like kind of on the edge for me, which is the Rebecca Hall and what is her name, Dr. Andrews, I think, and Gia, her adopted daughter, that whole plot line, which is like predictable but kind of effective. Like, it actually seems to give Rebecca Hall an opportunity to act for a minute, which is nice to see in a movie like this, where, you know, she's been in this franchise for a while, and I've always just found her to be like woefully underutilized, and this relationship between her and her adoptive daughter, at least, it like gives her something to do in this movie, even though it's not like a ton to do. What did you think about that? Did you find that to be like an effective subplot? Because like, it's one of those things where I thought it worked well in the moment, but then as I was leaving the theater and thinking about it a little bit more, it was kind of like, oh, why would Gia actually want to stay with her? Because her life seemed pretty miserable on the surface. Like, it does seem like, you know, she might actually have a better way of life, or like a deeper experience or something, staying down in Hollow Earth with these people who are members of her tribe that she didn't even realize were alive. You know,
I think it works well enough for me. Like, I think it's about as good as you can expect with this type of monster movie to like give you something to latch onto for the human characters. And I say that well in the wake of Godzilla Minus One, which did a spectacular job giving us probably the best human characters we've ever had in a Godzilla movie. And a story that like you latch onto, you know, just as much, if not more, than the monster movie side of things, which is super impressive for a Godzilla movie. But I think it depends on like the tone of Godzilla movie that you're dealing with. And because this movie is so primarily focused on the ridiculousness and like the wild side of kaiju movies, where like the focus really is on just the big monster battles and what they're doing, I don't mind that I'm not as invested in the relationship between those characters. And I think it works fine for Rebecca Hall's character. And, you know, for the kid, I think that like there's something that comes with having a figure in your life that like cares about your well-being and wants to take care of you, as opposed to like, even if like you feel a sense of belonging in like, you know, that tribe of people that exists in Hollow Earth, you don't necessarily have like a solid connection there. So like, yeah, she's kind of in a position where she's like kind of a fish out of water in both worlds in a way. Mm-hmm. I think it works, you know, well enough for like for the movie and the tone that it's trying to strike here.
Okay, all right, let's take a break and then we'll be right back.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, so let's get into maybe some favorite moments or favorite scenes. Did you have anything that jumped out at you as you know, like a fist pumping moment or something that you just thought was done like especially well, Brad?
Kong getting his metal arm is just a cool, you know, big dumb thing that I love that they added in here. You know, the thinking about like a program where like they thought, you know what, we should try and figure out a way to help Kong fight other monsters, and the best way to do that is to just give him a robot arm. it's just an awesome idea to me, and I love the way that it's executed.
The part where they were like, oh, and it just so happens to be down at, you know, station one or whatever. Yeah. And like, it's already been built and it's basically like works as part of like, it's like Tony Stark's Iron Man armor in the later movies where he just kind of like uses nanotechnology or whatever. And he's able to kind of like call it to him by will. It's just like, it just kind of like, you know, slots on his arm and there it is. It all works perfectly. It was great.
Yeah, exactly. I think Shimo is a really cool kaiju. The, you know, bringing that character in and like having the ice blast effect be part of it. It was a cool development. Scar King's a pretty intimidating villain. You know, the fight between the apes when they meet each other was great. But for me, the showstopper and like the most fun is in that third act when Hollow Earth goes zero G and you just have all these monsters flying all over and like, you know, floating into each other and fighting in midair. And like that was just cool as hell.
Yeah, very imaginative. I haven't really seen anything like that on that scale before. The moment where Kong uses Mini Kong or Baby Kong, he has a name, I guess, but I don't think it's ever actually spoken in the movie. Do you know that character's name? I think Suko or something like that. Is that right? Maybe. I think it is. Anyway, that when Kong like uses that character. Okay, Suko, yeah. When he uses that character as a like a baseball bat almost, and he's like flinging him around and like beating the other apes with that character, I laughed out loud in the theater, and I kind of like felt bad for doing it because it's basically Kong like using a toddler as a weapon, like grabbing him by the ankle and just flinging him around. And I think you're supposed to feel a little I don't know, sympathy pain or something for that character, but Jeremy Mathai wrote an article for Slash Film that is going to go up on Monday. That's a ranking of all of the titans that appear in this movie. And he referred to that Baby Kong character as having little shit energy, which I thought was pretty good. So I don't know, that moment of Kong using him as a weapon really stood out to me.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
What did you think about that character and his like, he's like constantly luring Kong into danger and then eventually kind of begrudgingly, you know, teams up with him and is like on his side. What did you think about that whole arc, I guess?
You know, I really like that as a character because he feels kind of like a cartoon character in that way, how like a lot of cartoons, like there's a big boss and then there's always like a little mini henchman who's like, yeah, yeah, get him, boss, you know? and that's kind of like what Suko felt like to me. And so like having him be that guy who's constantly, you know, tricking Kong and like luring him into these traps and like trying to weasel out of, you know, being in trouble and everything. But then like it added that nice, you know, emotional element for Kong too, where like he sees that like he's in that position because, you know, he's the little guy. And so he's basically being bullied by all the other apes. And so that's his way of surviving. And so the fact that Kong, you know, kind of gives him the benefit of the doubt and like tries to like be as nice to him as he can, you know, under the circumstances by giving him food and helping him, you know, it's that kind of thing that you like to see where you, like a villain takes a turn because they're treated, you know, nicely by the hero instead of so poorly by the villain. So,
yeah. Yeah. So speaking of taking a turn, one of the big moments you mentioned before, that big finale in Rio, and, you know, Godzilla and Kong join forces to fight Scar King and Shimo, and it basically turns into a Fast and Furious movie for a minute. Like, obviously, there's the Rio setting from Fast Five, but like the enemies to friends trajectory that happens for both Godzilla and Shimo in this movie, it just reminded me a little bit of how like every villain in the Fast and Furious movies eventually seems to come back around and, you know, join the family or whatever. Yeah. So I was entertained by that, just thinking about the parallels between those two franchises.
Not to mention the return of Mothra in the third act as well, you know?
So. Yeah. That's the next big thing. The final big moment that I wanted to mention here is Mothra, which like that took me totally by surprise. I think the marketing did a really good job of like hiding that, keeping that out of all the trailers and everything. There's actually one image of Godzilla and Kong standing, I think it's in Cairo, like opposite each other, and they're like roaring or whatever. And in the movie, Mothra is between them, like floating in the sky, flying in the sky. And Mothra has been digitally removed from that image in all the marketings. And I was like, ah, you guys, you're pulling a Marvel here. You're tricking people. But I thought it was really effective seeing Mothra come back. What did you think about the way that character was integrated into the story?
Yeah, I really liked it. That was, you know, that and like having the Iwi Kingdom, you know, that's the big part of the Showa part of this movie. And so, yeah, bringing Mothra into the equation was a nice surprise. Having, you know, her join forces with Godzilla and Kong again was very cool. So, yeah, it's I'm always going to be happy when Mothra shows up.
Yeah. Okay, so how do you think this movie stacks up against the other MonsterVerse movies? If you had to rank them right now, where would you put this?
It's definitely, I have more fun with it than I do King of Monsters, because King of Monsters, I feel like it just had so much potential, especially after how great that trailer was for it.
Yep.
And it just didn't really deliver what that trailer promised, I felt like. And this movie, like, it feels like it's more certain of its identity and how to execute it, thanks to Adam Wingard's, you know, vision. And it feels different enough from Godzilla versus Kong that it's not, you know, in, something that feels entirely new either, you know, like it borrows the right elements from Godzilla versus Kong while still taking it into a little bit different territory for these kinds of kaiju movies. And so I don't think it's quite as good as Godzilla versus Kong, because I really did have a lot of fun with Godzilla versus Kong. I think there's just something about bringing those characters together for the first time that makes it a little bit more exciting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and so I think it's somewhere in the middle, honestly, because like my favorite, honestly, out of all these is probably Kong Skull Island. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, I think somewhere somewhere around the middle of this is where this is gonna land.
For me, I think just like by default, this is my favorite of the MonsterVerse. I like Kong Skull Island as well. But I think that the action in this one is better and the scale is much bigger. And I thought they didn't screw up the human characters so much that like it would really ding the movie that way. So I think for me, my personal ranking is this and then Skull Island and then Godzilla versus Kong and then 2014's Godzilla and then King of the Monsters, like way, way, way down below that, because I was just like so incredibly disappointed with that movie as a whole experience. Yeah. So, okay. Anything else from Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, which... By the way, Brad, I don't know if you saw this, but I think Adam Wingard mentioned that the X should be silent in the title. And I'm like, no, sir, I'm sorry. You're putting it there. I'm saying it. I don't know.
I don't really understand. Yeah, like the style. Like, I guess, like, I don't know why you just don't go Godzilla and Kong, the New Empire. And I guess it's because they're not technically a team. Like, they're still enemies and they're just like happen to be working together because they need to. So like,
yeah,
I don't know. It just seems weird.
Fingers crossed for Godzilla divided by Kong next time around. So, anything else about this movie that you wanted to mention before we wrap it up here?
No, I don't think so. You know, I just had a lot of fun with this. It was just, it's a big, fun, goofy sci-fi adventure with great monster action. And it's just the right amount of blockbuster fun.
Cool. All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find much more about Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire at slashfilm.com. I will link to a couple things in the show notes, including a review of the movie as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a moment to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all on Monday.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.